Ever pinch pennies all year for that one family vacation, only to feel the budget blues afterwards? If so, I was just like you. After three vacationless years, I stumbled on credit card rewards travel and cracked the code to amazing vacations that I could actually afford.
Welcome to Wonderland on Points. In this podcast, you will discover how opening credit cards strategically can save you thousands on travel. We're not just dreamers anymore. We're two adventurous moms turning dreams into reality. Join us as we spill all the points and miles secrets.
And contrary to popular belief, you don't have to spend $1 million to earn 1 million points. Traveling on credit card points isn't reserved for those with overflowing bank accounts. It's for everyday people like you and me, learning to turn routine expenses into free travel.
Consider us your points travel guides. This is Wonderland on Points. Let the adventure begin. Welcome back to Wonderland on Points. My name is Mary Ellen.
Oh, I forgot we were doing that. Hi, guys. Welcome back. I am Joe.
We are so glad that you are with us today. We have a special guest on, Cam from Our Family Passport. She and her family cash in over $60,000 worth of credit card points every year to go on vacations. And she's going to share with us how you can do it too. She's going to give us some strategy that she thinks through and then talk about ways that she travels as a mom of a family of six. And so we get into a little bit about what that looks like to go all over the world with four children. It is a lot, and Cam shares some great stuff. But before we get into that, you have an exciting weekend coming up, Joe.
I do. By the time that this comes out, the weekend will have just wrapped itself up. But I am surprising my dad for his birthday, which is 2 days after Christmas. So I'm kind of rolling it all into one, even though I staunchly disagree with birthday Christmas combined gifts. You know, when it's a bigger one, I feel like it's okay. But it's just, never mind. I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole about my own experiences growing up as a person whose birthday is the first week of January. Anyways, I'm doing this. My dad and I, Michael W. Smith has been like a common bonding theme in our life. I remember it very fondly from when I was a kid. And so when I found out that he was going to be in Nashville, which is where my sister lives, I was like, you know what? We're going to take basically 24 hours and we're going to zip down there. And I'm not going to even tell my dad. I'm just going to tell him, like, you need to be available for this time. You need to be ready. And initially, this was on points. We were going to stay at a Hyatt down there. But then my sister was like, you guys, we'll just find space for you all. You just come stay here. And I was like, all right, I will get my points back. Yes, thank you. But here's the thing that I'm trying to do. And we will know if this has actually worked by the time this airs. So I'm sure there will be a reel about it on my Instagram if I manage to pull it off. But I have had the wheels of Nashville turning, trying to get into contact with Michael W. Smith's team to try to arrange a meet and greet. And it's a long story. I already made a video about it on my Instagram, but my dad was supposed to meet him like 25 years ago and it fell through because he was sick. So I just
thought Michael W. Smith was sick, had to cancel the meet and greet that your dad was going to.
Thank you for clarifying that. I said he, and I guess that's probably confusing. Yes, my dad was at the concert and he did the concert, but then he was like, I'm not feeling good. I'm not doing meet and greets tonight. And so that was canceled. And this was so long ago when I was a child. And I just thought that all this time later, it would be so full circle and serendipitous and special for my dad, who is the most selfless, giving, impossible to buy for, because what do you get for the man who doesn't need or want anything and always wants to be giving to others? So we will see if, you know, what I posted online actually makes anything happen. Who knows? The internet's a strange place. Miracles can happen. So
we'll see. It's exciting. It'll be, you know what, regardless of that, it's going to be a special time with your dad.
Yes.
So fun.
My brother is going.
Fun regardless.
Mm-hmm. My sister is going to be there. We'll be two siblings short of our full family, but you know, that's okay. Three of us and dad is going to be special, absolutely regardless of whether we get to meet him or not. So, but I had to try, you know,
Yeah, you had to try. Yeah. There's no harm in trying.
Exactly. You miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
Yes, you do.
So you did something super cute. Tell everybody what you did.
I went to a European Christmas market and I did not cash in any points or miles to actually fly to Europe. I found out. I don't know why I didn't know about it, but you know, within an hour of where I live, there's several options. And in Baltimore, there's a German Christmas market down by the water. It's really precious. I got cider in a little boot mug and I sipped it with my friend Megan and we just had a girls' night. We shopped at the little booths and found some fun things. So we just caught up and had fun in the festive Christmas market environment. And I've just been hearing all these points and miles people going over to the actual Christmas markets, which is so cool. That was not really anything on my radar for many years. And now I've been learning about it more. So it was fun to get a little bite-sized piece of that Christmas market fun. So if you're ever in Baltimore or the DC area around Christmas time, both of them have little European Christmas markets. So check those out. But
yes,
let's get into our episode with Cam.
Let's do it. This episode is great, guys. There is so much packed in here, and Cam is just the sweetest human being. So you are going to love this episode, and we're going to play it right now.
Okay, guys, today we are joined by our friend Cam from Our Family Passport. Cam is a good friend and business partner with Annie, who was on the podcast last week talking about Tahiti. And now we have the pleasure of talking to Cam about her family taking $60,000 worth of vacations for just $6,000. That is insane. We are so thankful to have you, Cam. Welcome to Wonderland on Points.
Thank you. I'm so excited to
be
here.
We are so excited to have you here. And I want to let everybody know that we got to meet you in person at the Travel More Conference. And one of the first things that this woman said to me is, I think that you are the single most adorable person I've ever seen. And I'm just sticking that one in my back pocket for life. Because it's rare as like a 33-year-old mom of a teen that anybody ever tells me that I'm super adorable. So I'll take it. I will take it. And that memory is just permanently in my skull combined with you as a person. So I was instantly like, well, I like this. I like this woman.
Well, I do think you're darling. So it works out.
Well, thank you.
Works out
I think you are just fabulous. You're like, not only are you a mom of like a bazillion kids and a world traveler, but you're like a fashion icon. Like, I don't know if you know this about yourself, but you're fabulous.
That is true.
I mean, every outfit that you had the whole weekend, even the outfit that happened after like some kind of soda mishap or something like that was amazing. I was like, wow, she just had a backup. And the backup is good.
Well, thank you. I try.
Well,
I try.
You do great. You do absolutely fantastic. My daughter, I can't ever show her any of your content because she'll be like, why don't you look fabulous like that all the time? Why do you go out of the house in fuzzy Uggs and yoga pants every day of your life?
I mean, the reality is that most days, I think most moms actually are in their fuzzy Uggs and they look like that. So I don't look like that on a day-to-day basis, I would say.
Okay.
For sure. I'm not all put together with my cute bags and stuff like that on
a
day-to-day
basis. Well, you could have fooled me and you do a great job. Okay. Why don't you give us a little bio? Tell us about your family makeup and how you got into Points and Miles personally first, and then also give us the journey of how it grew into an education thing.
Okay. I would love to. So I'm now the mom to a blended family of six. So there, we have four children. I brought one to the marriage. My husband brought two, and then we had one together. And so we love to travel all the time. But I actually grew up traveling. My parents took us all over. And I got married really young, and then I got divorced.
Same.
Really young.
Yeah.
Yep. And when I got divorced, I was working two teaching jobs at the time. I was an art history professor for a college here in Utah, and then I was teaching high school. And I had grown up traveling. I had done all of these things. I was married, and my then husband took care of our finances. And all of a sudden, it was like, wait, what is happening? I don't have the money that I had to travel. And so I figured I really have to figure this out. I have to dig in and I have to figure this out. So that's where I really, really started learning about Points and Miles was doing it for me as a single mom at the time, for me and my son, and how we could make it work. And then I got married. I, you know, gained more kids and I had another baby, and it was like, wait, I want to continue doing this with my family. And we went to a child psychologist when we first got married. I obviously had come off of a divorce. That's catastrophic for anybody. And I was just paranoid. Like, I cannot have another family fail. I can't blend these kids together and then, you know, go through this again. So what are some things to do? And he said that there were three things. He's this world-renowned child psychologist. And he said that there were three things that all of his patients, and they kind of like their exit interview, he would ask them. And there were three things that were a theme that they would always say. And he would ask them, what do you remember about your childhood? What are some happy things about your childhood? And he said these three things always came up. It was the meals they had together as a family, the traditions they made, and the vacations they went on. And I thought, okay, I can do that, and I can nail that. So we both, my husband and I, when we first got married, we decided, okay, we're really gonna prioritize that, and we're gonna focus on that. And because it was such a part of my childhood, I really wanted to give those opportunities to my children. And then it grew into education just kind of by accident. That's my background. My background is in academic research. I was an art history professor. I had a special certification in online learning platforms and online just learning. And so that's what we did. So that's kind of how it's just grown and evolved over time. And we really do travel a lot. So we've been to over 60 countries as a family. And like I said, most of those have been with my kids. And so that's what we do. That's what we do as a family. And I'm not a perfect parent by any means, but my goodness, we have yummy meals at our house and we go on awesome vacations.
I love everything about this. I have goosebumps right now. First of all, I just really resonate with that story of like, you get married super young, you have a kid, you go through a divorce. It, you know, if you're in a conservative community, like I assume that you might have been and that I was, it just shakes you to your core and it does fill you with feelings of shame, guilt, failure, all of that stuff. And I have found very few things as restorative as travel, but it's just,
for sure,
again, like single mom, regular middle class job, or even really less than middle class at that point. When I was back then, I was definitely not making enough to survive. Not really sure how that happened, but it's just like, you don't really have the means to do these restorative things. Like, what can you do? And points and miles is the answer. And I think that's how all of us somehow end up really passionate about this, is just how it personally and emotionally connects to our lives. And that story is amazing. And I bet that your family is close. I maybe not. I don't know. But travel really brings you.
No, we are. We are close.
And it's because you've been intentional. And I love that.
For me, traveling, it's about my family. It's about the time away with my family and making those memories and doing those things
together. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, that brings us to what we're going to talk about today. And that is, in the course of a year, and you've done this really many times, not just one particular year, but on an ongoing basis, really, you're able to do this, where you're taking $60,000 worth of family vacations for a tenth of the price, for $6,000. And some of these vacations are more lavish than others, but none of us, well, I don't think, not me or Joe, have a $60,000 travel budget. You know, $6,000 is even a little bit pushing our travel budget. So how are you doing this? We want to tell our listeners so that they can start making it happen for their families too. So tell us, let's give us an example, maybe over the last 12 months, of the places that you have done to make this happen.
So over the last 12 months, our family, we've gone to Bora Bora. We went to Disney World. We went to Japan for a month. We went to France, London, and Belgium. We went all together in the summer, and that was such an amazing time. We were gone for 3 weeks. And then my husband and I and my baby went to Hawaii, and then we're getting ready to go on a big trip to Mexico for Christmas. My kids don't know. It's a surprise.
Oh, yay.
And then Disneyland. I'm actually kind of thinking, oh no, we forgot a couple other things. But those were like our big ones. Those are, you know, that's our last 12 months, what we've done. And I will say, I don't think that that's for everyone. It's, you don't have to be going to all these places all the time. You don't have to go somewhere for a month. You don't have to go to Europe and Japan and Africa. You know, you can do what works for you. And I like that you guys brought up your original budget, your original travel budget. Some years our original travel budget before we added points and miles is smaller, and some years it's bigger. And I personally use points and miles to stretch that travel budget. So last year, I think I had added up, I had done the math. I think it was $77,000 worth of travel that we had gotten from our points and miles. And then this year, I actually think it'll be a little bit more than 60,000. I put on Instagram 60,000 because that's kind of the average over, you know, the last 5 to 7 years. For me, that 6,000 is annual fees. We pay a lot in annual fees, or it'll be like, you know, taxes on airfare. One thing that I really try to prioritize, and that I don't talk about on Instagram as much, and I don't see people talking about this, are actual other costs that are associated with travel. When we were in Japan, we hired some private guides, some local guides, and I don't count that into my, you know, that budget, that $60,000. For me, that's like, this is the money that we would have spent on our hotels, we would have spent on our airfare. These were the annual fees that we cost, and, you know, that we paid in the taxes. So we really try hard when we go places that we get local guides to, like, you know, help with the economy and get to know and teach our kids. We had really good local guides in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and that was really awesome for my then 11-year-old, you know, learning about certain things and about tolerance and kindness and, you know, why we should
try
to find peace instead of war. But so yeah, that's what we really do. And that is what we prioritize as a family. We don't do big gifts in our home. Christmas, each of my kids are getting a small little thing, and then we're doing the staycation. And that's what we prioritize. So that's kind of how it works. And I will say it's my job now. So we have a lot more points than I had when I first started out. But when I first started out, I was a single mom, and I still was able to take my son to Europe, and I still was able to take him to Disney when he was little. And at the time in my life, that was amazing. And that's exactly what
absolutely. I think for the majority of people who work jobs that are not, you know, they don't run their own companies, you have a set number of PTO days anyways. You can't necessarily be taking 10 trips a year. So you can easily, with points and miles, accomplish trips enough to use your PTO. And that's what's really beautiful about it. I just love that. Do you have kind of like a sky, like a bird's eye view of the points you used for each trip, like the amount of points you had to redeem?
Yes. So we knew for Japan, I really knew that I wanted to stay at some of those really nice Hyatt properties. And so I had been saving up for a little bit. I had been building up that, you know, that reserve, I guess, of Chase Ultimate Rewards to use for those. And it was quite a bit. So for 2 of the 4 weeks that we were there, we did like a cruise to South Korea and stuff like that. But the other 2 weeks we were in Tokyo, and then we were in Kyoto, and then we did Tokyo Disney. So we did Amex points for Tokyo Disney. There's a really awesome Hilton property right there that is on the line, so you can take the little monorail right into the property. So we did that, and then we did Chase Ultimate Rewards for the Andaz Tokyo. That was amazing. It was beautiful. And then we wanted to do the Park Hyatt in Kyoto, but my family, my mom was with us, and my dad was with us, and my siblings, and they didn't have enough points for the Park Hyatt. So I was like, okay, well, we'll just do them. I had originally booked the Park Hyatt, and they had booked the Hyatt Regency. And I was like, well, I actually want to be with my family. And so we ended up going, and I loved the Hyatt Regency. I hear everyone always talking about the Park Hyatt Kyoto, and I do think it's amazing. The Regency was beautiful. It was in an excellent location. It was 20,000 points a night. Like, it was awesome. I loved it. And nobody talks about it. It's all, you always hear the Park Hyatt Kyoto. And that's one thing too, is I feel like on Instagram and some of these other places, you always see like the sexiest or the best or the most lavish, but sometimes it doesn't have to be that. And the unsexy is real for families. So that's one other thing. We rarely use points to book business class, because there are sometimes 6 of us going places, And that's just not even realistic. So when we flew to Japan, it was, you know what, we were packed back in an economy on my Delta flight, and it just is what it yeah. is what it is, you know?
Right.
No one wants to spend 12 hours with their 3-year-old and back in economy, but that's what we did. And we had the best time. And when we went to Europe, again, we really prioritized a lot of Hyatt properties in Europe with the kids. We spent a week in an Airbnb in Normandy, and they loved that. It was like this little farmhouse. We used Capital One miles for that. And airfare. Airfare, obviously, when it's a family of six, is where that gets tricky. And so we try to find those sweet spots. We love Flying Blue for that reason. You can get those family redemptions, and you get the discount on kids. So a lot of points. I will say that we spend a lot. We've probably spent this year alone, I'm sure we've spent 500,000 to 700,000 points if I was to sit down and add it all up.
So would you say that you're accumulating these points from a lot of spend, or are you opening a lot of new cards every single year and hitting the sign-up bonuses? Is it the personal referrals? Obviously, most people are not going to be accumulating and spending 700,000 points, especially if it's not their business. Right. But give our listeners some concrete ways that you earn and strategize those big chunks of points.
So I would say I actually don't spend too much. I don't worry too much about personal referrals, because that's now taxed that I'm a business. And so I don't worry too much about the personal referrals. I think a lot of times people think, oh, these content creators just have so many points from these personal referrals. I don't stress too much about that. I think for the average family, a good strategy is to be really organized and to get a new card. If you're wanting to take these big trips several times a year, I would say you get a new card every 3 to 4 months. That would be my suggestion. I think now that both my husband and I are business owners, our business spend really helps with that. But again, that's not realistic for everybody all of the time. And I will say that I think some concrete things to do is to – I'm numbers. I love numbers. I love data. I love research. Yes. And that actually is sexy for me. I love budgets. And I know for some people it's not, but there's something really liberating in going through your budget and being like, okay, this is where I'm spending the most amount of money, and strategizing that. Just being smart and intentional with the time and the money that you do have and the things that you're spending on, instead of just, you know, whipping out whatever card you have in your wallet, but being mindful, like, okay, I know that I can get 4 times the points here, or I can get 3 times the points here, or I can do a stack here. And that takes a little bit of time and energy up front, but I feel like the back end returns are so huge. Awesome on that. And that is realistic. It's not realistic for everyone to be like, well, I'm a content creator, and I, you know, not everyone's going to have a course about points and miles. Not everyone's going to travel every month, but everyone can be more mindful about where they're spending and how they're spending, and, you know, just kind of building up a strategy.
Absolutely.
Okay, so you said opening a card every 3 or 4 months. Let's give people a roadmap. We've talked a little bit, most of our listeners understand the concept of player one and player two. If you have a spouse or a travel partner, somebody that you go with, you know, you kind of refer each other back and forth to cards. Would you recommend that this is, you know, player one opens a card, 3-4 months later, player two opens, then player one? Or is it a little more frequently than that if you're taking turns with player one and player two? Do you think people should open up to the business cards? Talk us through that a little bit more.
So here's my caveat, and this is where I would start. And this is going from being a single mom working 2 teaching jobs where I wasn't spending a ton of money, I didn't have a ton of business spend, to where I am now, it's vastly different. And both of those places are okay. So my first thought before I say, okay, build a strategy, build a roadmap, what really matters is where is the individual in their monthly spend? What is smart for them? What is doable? What is reasonable? Mm. So that's the first. And there's not a wrong answer with that. I grew up, my parents had multiple businesses. I will never, ever have as many points and as much money as my parents had. I just won't. And that is okay. That's okay. It's working within what you have. So that would be my first thing, is I think that this is lots of times we can pair, like, oh, well, so-and-so went here and they did it on points and they saved this much money. And yes, that is possible. But it also is a personal, it's also a personal thing, right? It's like people that invest money, you can only invest so much in the stock market depending on where you are financially. So my first thought and my first caveat is there's not a wrong answer. For me and for my evolution, where I started was, okay, I'm just going to get one or two cards. I'm going to take one trip with my son. I'm going to use my PTO. That's what I'm going to do. And then it just kind of evolved from there. So Mary Ellen, to your question, now my husband and I, we both have our own businesses. We do have quite a bit of business spend. We individually are both getting new cards probably every 3 months because we have business spend and we're able to meet those minimum spends. It has not always been that way. And like I said, that's okay. I think when someone's building a strategy, it's like when you go and buy a house, you have to decide what is comfortable, what is smart, what is responsible here. You know, what can we afford? How can we work this out? So I would say you first just need to assess, all right, how much do we spend? My other question is that spend needed? Don't spend money just to spend money. If that spend's not needed, don't spend it. In the long run, it's better to not spend that money and not get those points and to, you know, I really do believe strongly. And I think because I started as a single mom and I was so concerned about that, but being fiscally aware as well of what you're putting on your credit card, what you're spending, are you being mindful? And then I would go from there. Like, okay, if a family household, if they're spending, you know, if they have spend between businesses and childcare and all of these things, let's say that it's, you know, $6,000 a month, then you can decide, okay, this is a good strategy. So I'm going to open a card. My husband will open a card in 2 months. And you know, you just kind of piggyback off that. And that's what I would do. I really do think it is a matter of getting down, looking at the numbers. I also think it really matters on where you want to go. And I know that's kind of an unpopular opinion in the points and miles world, because I know a lot of people are like, well, you just go, you know, you get a good deal and that there's business class flights now to Rome. So you take those. That's not actually how we travel as a family. Because we're a blended family, we have to get things cleared with two other sets of families and two other sets of parents. We have to be really strategic about our time. And so, you know, that doesn't actually work for us. So we have to decide, okay, I'm going to go here. Like this year, I'm not really prioritizing earning a ton of Chase points because where we're going as a family is more, we're staying at more Hiltons, more Marriott's. So I'm really focusing more a little bit on American Express and Capital One and those transfer partners. So I would say for listeners, for a beginner listener, start where you are. Just start where you are and just start. For an intermediate listener, I would say really start assessing your spending and determine where you can earn a few more points here and there. You know, be a little bit more mindful about those multipliers, be a little bit more mindful about your strategy. And for an advanced, I would say really start looking at some of those redemptions that you want to go to and play around, figure out how do you get to Mount Kilimanjaro in business class? What does that look like? And start going directly towards
absolutely.
Those.
That was spoken like a teacher, like a professor, truly. Like you absolutely nailed that one. I think that's amazing because it's been a long time on this podcast. In fact, maybe just our first 1 to 3 episodes where we reminded people about the very first thing you should be doing is assessing your budget. Before you get any cards, you need to know how much you're spending, where your money is going, what can actually be put on cards because not everything can. And then you need to be kind of deconstructing from that point and deciding what cards you need to get. And then if it fits the travels that you want to take, it's extremely valuable advice. And I think that we forget to tell new people that because some of us have been in it so long that part of the process was forever ago. And we forget that not everybody thinks through that. You can't get a card with $10,000 minimum spend if your family credit card spend can only be $2,000 a month, which is the case for many people. Right. So I think, it is okay. And there's tons of cards.
That's okay. There's tons of cards and tons of places and tons of things that you can do within
absolutely.
That. And I would even push back, Joe, and I would say even for those of us that have been doing this for a while, taking a step back and reassessing budget and, okay, our spending evolves over time. Where am I spending? Where can I be smarter? Where can I be a little bit more streamlined? Actually really can help.
No, that's very true. I've actually gone back recently and readjusted things because I realized a lot of my bills that are even on auto pay are not even switched over to the cards where I could have been earning higher multipliers. Because sometimes you just get, you know, you put everything on cards to begin with, or you set it up on one card to hit the sub. But then when you hit that, you didn't remember to go back and change it to your other card that actually earns more points on that bill. So you are absolutely correct. Right. That is a great reminder for all of us. I think just to tie into that question a little bit, for those people who are a little bit more intermediate to advanced and are wondering what it's like to be much further into this process with lots of cards every year, do you find that you're still getting approvals even all of these years in? Or have you ever hit the point where people are like, why do you have so many cards?
Okay, I would say both, but it's been that way for years for me. And when that happens, so this is my, and this is kind of unpopular too. I actually, for me and for the students that we have that we try to teach, I feel strongly in building a robust strategy. So not just sticking to Chase, not just sticking to Capital One, not just sticking to American Express, but kind of alternating. I think that when someone maxes that, we're so quick to teach Chase and for people to do Chase. A, because it's a quick win. B, it's an easy program. And C, it's just, you know, it's just, it's great. It's easy. It's easy. It's sexy. You can get some of those really beautiful Hyatts for less. The problem that I have found is when someone goes all in on Chase, they max out their 524, it actually does impact their ability to get accepted for American Express or Capital One when they might need those later on. So I really like building an alternating strategy a little bit. And that's what I do in everything. I will alternate personal Chase with a business American Express with a Capital One. And so I do alternate a lot. I will say in the last 18 months, I've had two denials because I have too much credit available to me.
Yeah.
And that's okay. That's all right. And then you reassess that strategy. You know, I've had to close a few cards and bring that down just a little bit. Or you call the reconsideration line, like, hey, can I move, you know, 10,000 of credit here to here? And I will say the more credit that you have, the higher your credit score actually is, which is beautiful. That's beautiful how that works. But there are times where I will, you know, I really wanted I think it was the Ink Unlimited just recently that had that really high welcome offer. And they told me no. They were like, nope, you've already had that. And I thought, okay, I just need to reassess and re-strategize. So then I was like, well, I'm going to wait my period of time and I'm going to get an American Express business card. So that's what I did. That doesn't happen often. Like I said, that's only been two times in the last 18 months for me. But again, it is a strategy for me. I'm like, okay, I know I need to close this one, or I know I need to downgrade here or whatever. But and that's okay too. Credit card denials are not the end of the world. It's not.
That's right.
It's not as scary as everybody thinks it is. I mean,
it's good to hear that it happens to everybody. It happens to people who've been in this a long time. So don't be afraid. It is probably going to happen to you at some point if you stay in the game. So that's really good to hear. Okay. So if we are opening cards, we're earning sign-up bonuses, let's get back to more of tangible things for families who want to make a dream trip happen. One of the things that we've brought up several times for my family, I'm a family of five. And like when I go to Europe next summer, it gets really pricey because I'm going to have to get two hotel rooms and all the hotels we stay in to accommodate my family. So with you guys being a family of six, do you stay? I know you've mentioned Hyatt a lot, so I know you're pretty loyal to Hyatt. So you also mentioned Marriott and Hilton for upcoming things. Do you really stick to hotels even with a family of six, or do you dive into Airbnbs more?
That is a really, really good question. Most of the time we stick to hotels, and I'm not actually really specifically loyal to one brand. And I mentioned this at the beginning, for me, it's the destination. So while I love Hyatt, and I think Hyatt is an awesome sweet spot, Hyatt's global footprint is a lot smaller than Hilton and Marriott. So I kind of build my strategy based on, like I had mentioned, where I want to go. It is hard with the family of five and six. And in fact, when we were in Belgium, We had to get three rooms, not just two. We had to get three rooms.
Wow.
And sometimes the places that we go, I actually do want a hotel. I want a hotel room, you know, some of those city destinations. When we go to, we're going to go to Rome next year and we'll get an Airbnb there just because that just works out better for our family. But we don't always do Airbnbs. Again, it kind of just depends where we're going, what we're doing, what we want the experience to be. And I, again, I don't think it's wrong. I do think that Airbnbs can be a really solid win for larger families who have kids.
Okay. I have a follow-up question because I know you're a numbers person and you're strategic and you want to get the most value possible. Do you ever let yourself use the Capital One purchase eraser to erase Airbnbs, or do you not let yourself do that because you know you could get more value using the transfer partners?
Okay, so that is a really, really good question. I have only ever erased one Airbnb stay, and that was when we went to Europe and we were there for a week. And the reason why is because I had set a goal that I had wanted to do the entire thing on points and miles. And so I did that. But honestly, from a numbers perspective, it didn't make sense. However, and this is where I'm going to throw in, everybody's in a different spot and that's okay. Free is free. So if you're a family and your budget is a smaller travel budget, and you know what? An Airbnb works better for your family. Who cares what the cost of the flight is? If you're going to be able to go and give your family that experience and it's going to be amazing, then do that.
Okay, before you hear the rest of today's episode, we have a Facebook group and we want to tell you all about it.
If you're like us and you love exploring new destinations without breaking the bank, you're going to want to join.
We've launched this exclusive Facebook group dedicated to sharing tips, tricks, and insider secrets on maximizing your travel experience using points and miles.
So whether you're a seasoned pro or just dipping your toes into the world of traveling on credit card rewards, this is the perfect community for you.
Plus, you'll have a chance to connect with our amazing listeners, ask each other questions, and learn from each other's experiences.
So if you're ready to take your travel game to the next level, join us in the Traveling on Points, Wonderland on Points podcast Facebook group.
You can find the link for the group in our show notes or just search it on Facebook. We cannot wait to see you there sharing your travel stories and picking up some new tricks along the way. Okay, let's get back to the episode.
So yeah, because I'm a numbers person, because I love budgets and we have a travel budget every year, it kind of just depends on that. You know, what do I need? This year, we prioritized our Capital One miles for business class flights for my husband and I to go to Bali. And like I said, I don't actually usually like to do that. It's an 18-hour flight. I'm not doing – I can do most things in economy. I don't know if an 18-hour flight to Bali I can. It's our anniversary present. And so I won't. I won't actually purchase an Airbnb stay in the next little while because I chose to do that instead. It's all just kind of choosing what works best for you. But
I've been struggling. I fight myself on it. And I have erased some for the exact same reason, Cam, that you said. And that I'm like, okay, I want to really do this all on points and miles. I want to be able to say every single night of the stay was points and miles or whatever, nothing out of pocket. And so that's when I get tempted to do it. But realistically, it's hard because I know – you know, I can get more value when it comes down to money and numbers. I can get more value.
I have to throw something in. This is what I've been thinking about a ton because I was very resistant to purchase erasing for a long time because you always get hammered value, value, value. But especially like when I was planning London and we were really looking for a place to stay that was in the mix of the city, it was a difference between coming up with 80, 90,000 points to stay in these hotels that were crazy amounts of money per night. So the value of those points was really good. Or I could stay in a really nice Airbnb in still a great location, and I'm spending 30,000 Capital One points to erase that purchase because it was $300 for the night versus cashing in 80,000 of my points on a hotel. The value is in fact less when you're talking cents per point, but I still have points that I didn't have to cash in. So like you kind of have to weigh that.
For sure. And that's where that's what I was going to say is when we were in Europe, we had all six of us. It was expensive. I mean, Europe is just not cheap, right? You can go to Asia. Like actually Japan, the food in Japan is not expensive. The activities aren't crazy expensive. Europe is not cheap. And so I just knew, well, I want to go for this long. I want to do these things with my family. So, you know, value is in the eye of the beholder a lot of times too. And so I don't feel bad for using that to erase those purchases, but I also don't think, you know, in my next Airbnb stay that I will either. I think it just kind of depends what is it for that experience. And don't beat yourself up over it either.
Free is free.
So if it's like I'm taking my family 5 to Europe and we're going to only spend X amount. And how awesome is that? That they get that experience. Who cares? Who cares if your value per point is a little bit
absolutely
less? Your kids aren't going to care. You're not going to care in 5 years. Like it's the experience.
100%.
So true.
That's my convoluted answer that has a dichotomy of, well, do the math, but also do what you want to do anyway.
I love that.
Everything in life is balanced.
Walking dichotomy. That's my personal self-given title right here. Okay, so let's talk about your favorite countries for traveling with kids, because you had even a reel about this that I saw, and it's places that people might not expect, which is what I loved so much about it. So walk us through what those are and why.
Okay, we're just a little bit different and that's okay. We love the Middle East as a family. I love Egypt. I love Morocco. I think the people are amazing. They're so kind to children. You cannot even believe it. My favorite thing about Egypt was just how amazing the people were with my children. They loved my children and it was just such an awesome experience. Norway is amazing with kids. It's beautiful. It's active. It's outside. People are so great. Thailand is so good. I personally just believe that kids can go almost anywhere and pick up everything and have an amazing experience. And I think the more I travel, the more I realize that everybody everywhere, for the most part, is good. And regardless of socioeconomic status, regardless of race, regardless of belief systems, people just want their families to be happy and successful and healthy. That's what they want. And so I feel so strongly in like taking my kids places where they can see that and they can learn and become global citizens. And I love exposing them to different religions and cultures and backgrounds. And I know this is stupid and I know it's like kumbaya and all woo-woo, but I really do believe that like travel makes people
better. That's not stupid.
Makes them
it's kinder. True.
I feel like my little ones are so compassionate and when they get to go and see and learn and experience different things. So I'm all about, you know, go to the fun places, go to Disney World, go to Hawaii, go to those awesome places that everybody loves. But if you're up for it, go somewhere that seems a little bit different and scary and experience it. We loved Egypt. I know that's kind of a hot button and some people don't.
I'm glad that you're saying that because I don't know what is happening with my Instagram, but I keep getting targeted for like all the videos showing you how Egypt is super overwhelming. If you're a woman, they're always trying to scam you. They're always in your face. I watched 5 or so of those over the last couple of months and it was enough to put me off of Egypt, which is wild because as a child, I was obsessed with Egyptian mythology, wanted to be an archaeologist, have always been fascinated by Egyptian history, like always wanted to see the pyramids. And so it was a little disappointing the way that that stuff is getting pushed and it kind of scares you off of it. So let's take a moment for Egypt.
I also think there is truth to that too, because you know what? That's somebody's experience. Like, hey, this is really overwhelming and this does feel scary. I really think that being prepared is super helpful. When we went to Egypt, we had a private guide with us the entire time. We had a private driver and we actually did have security some of the time as well. We never felt scared. But I can see how for a solo traveler, if you've never been to the Middle East before, you haven't, like that would feel really overwhelming. When we decided to go, I had did all the research I could on it. And one thing that I read was that, you know, Egypt's economy really just does rely on tourists. And so this is a true story. I live in like conservative Utah, and I went to the bank and I'm like, I need $400 in once. And the bank teller was like, wait, what? And I'm like, yes, $400 in $1 bills. He was looking at me like, I promise I'm not a stripper. I'm not going to a strip club. I'm going to Egypt. Okay. And he looked at me like even more confused. But I just decided, you know what, when I go, I'm not going to be bugged by the people that are begging for money. I'm not going to be bugged. Like, that is their culture. That is how they're surviving. So when I go to the bathroom and someone hands me a piece of toilet paper and they expect a dollar, you know what, I'm going to give it to them. And I'm going to build that into my budget. And it's going to be totally fine. And we had no issues. And it just was like, okay, I just need to accept that that's what that is. And then equally so, when you go to Japan and you don't tip there, there's something really, really refreshing about that as well. You know, it's just kind of understanding the customs and the culture and what to expect when you get there, to be a little bit more prepared. So we had a stack, and we were told they want American money. So take your US dollar bills. And I mean, it was like, sure. Yep. You opened my car door for me. Perfect. Here's a $1 bill, you know? And that was not a bad thing.
No, that's amazing.
I was fine doing that.
Mindset there.
I need to circle back here. I need to circle back to
circle back.
We went very quickly over the fact that you hired security and a private driver. How did you find these things? Like, how do you go about on the internet? Let me look up private security in Egypt for my family. Where did you book that through?
So, okay. So first things, you don't hire private security yourself. The Egyptian government, this is really, really interesting. And I'm sure I'm messing this up in some way. They really need tourism. So they really strongly, like, they really try hard to protect their tourists. So I found a really good guide, and I just researched, and I love that. And that's what I do. Right. But I also have like an art history background. So I knew I want to see this, this, and this, and I want to work with an Egyptologist. So I just started researching like best Egypt guides. I actually have her name. She's amazing. We can share it in the show notes if you want it. She's so amazing. And she arranged everything. It was okay. We're showing up here. We have an 18-month-old with us, and my mom is with us, my brother, and this is what we want to do. And she arranged it all. And I just said we needed a driver. And then what happened was, depending on the day and depending on where we were at, we had private security in Alexandria. The Egyptian government just assigns like, nope, these guys need security this day. So we showed up to our, you know, our driver came to pick us up and said, hey, just FYI, we have private security guide. He was actually really awesome and really nice. He had his, you know, his big gun.
Okay.
And we were like, okay, perfect. Yeah. All right. And that didn't happen every day, but we were driving from Cairo to Alexandria, and I don't even know exactly how that works out, but that's, we got assigned to that day. And, you know, okay.
What is that run? So for this tour guide who was so amazing,
because
when I hear that, I think, oh my goodness,
dollar signs. I kind of think we should have an Egypt episode. If you did that trip on Points and Miles,
I
think we should have you back.
We did it on Points
and Miles. No, we're not going to answer that question, Mary Ellen. We're not going to, the people have to wait. Nope, we're not going to do it. We got to tease it a little bit. We, Cam, if you will come back for an Egypt, I highly doubt we're going to be able to find anybody in our community that's done Egypt on Points and Miles. So I am fascinated. I think it's enough for a whole episode, and we've already beat it a lot just now. So I think we should wait.
I will switch my question, Cam.
Okay,
this is more general for a lot of families as well. My kids have tree nut allergies, severe life-threatening tree nut allergies. I know that you travel with celiac.
Yes.
Let's talk a little bit about international travel can be very scary for families that have severe food allergies. I mean, we can bring an EpiPen, but it's still scary having your children try foods from all over the world and not really knowing what is in the food. So how has your family balanced that? How have you managed traveling and not being overcome with anxiety to eat food all over the world?
So I will first just validate, when it's your kids, it's different. So I, right now, am the only one in my immediate family. I'm the only one that has celiac disease. So I can 1000% validate why you're like, these are my kids, right? Like I have to protect them. I was devastated when I was first diagnosed because I was like, what does this mean? And I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It does take out one of the most fun parts of traveling for me is that, you know what? You don't get to try the fun things. And that just is what it is. I learned really quickly. I'm not a carry-on only person simply because I check a bag with food everywhere I go. And I know at minimum, if I cannot find somewhere safe to eat, that I have food with me that I can eat. We spend a lot of time at grocery stores when we go places, and that can be tricky with Trina allergies, especially in different countries when you're trying to learn. I'm going to circle back to a private guide. Those can be really invaluable for that, where you go. Having someone that speaks the language perfectly, that knows, that can tell you, okay, here are the ingredients. I have an allergen card that I take with me everywhere. I do a lot of research ahead of time. But I can just validate it is really tough and it's not super easy. And it does take some of the fun out of what that, you know, I don't get to just try street food anymore. I don't get to do that. And food becomes one of our most expensive costs on our trips, because a lot of times the places that do really well with allergies are the more expensive places. And that's not always the case, but that is tough. And I got gluten really bad in Japan. And actually it was my fault. I was like, I don't know, this doesn't look right. This doesn't feel right. And I was really sick for a few days. But it's different when it's a Trina allergy and you're like rushing to the emergency room, right? I can be up all night puking my guts out for a little bit. But I will just say that it's not super fun. And I pack food. I pack protein shakes. I pack gluten-free bread. I pack food. Anytime we go to Asia, I take my own soy sauce.
And it's scary. My children, you know, my son, he is almost 12, and we've known since he was about 2 that he had the tree nut allergy. And honestly, at times we almost forget about it, right? Because he hadn't had a reaction in so long, and you think, oh, is he even still allergic? And then about 2 years ago, he accidentally consumed some pecans that were hidden under caramel drizzle on a dessert at an event where people had brought food, and he eats cheesecake all the time. He thought it was fine. It was very much not fine. He went full on anaphylaxis. We did EpiPen. 4 hours later, he had a rebound reaction, needed another EpiPen. I mean, it's really terrifying because you go from this is a completely healthy child to in a snap your fingers and he could die. You know, it's scary. And when we went to Honduras as a family last year, it was the first time that I really thought about it more when traveling as a family, and was like, wow, this is scary because I want to go to these places all over the world, but some of them don't have a hospital 10 minutes away or an ambulance that I know can get here in 2 minutes to help. So it's something that I think about a lot, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners have kids with allergies. So I just want to talk about it a little bit more on the podcast and ask for tips and what other people do. I have seen some Facebook groups for moms of allergy kids who travel, and so that I just started looking into those recently. But thank you for sharing about celiac and about how that affects you.
Well, and I mean, this is not a sexy answer either. This is actually really an unsexy answer, but there is a time and season for everything. And it may not be the best time to take your family to Thailand, you know, where there's peanut sauce and everything. And it just, that just is what it is. Right. And that's okay. There are amazing other places that you can go to. And then maybe it will be in the future, or maybe, and I don't know. And that's something I do have to consider. I cannot go too long on a trip without having my own kitchen. And I just know that. And I also know that eats into my budget. I know that eats into my family's budget. I just know it. And that's something I just have to build in. And that's not a fun answer. I wish I had like, no, there's some really good things. I do believe though that there are a lot of resources. I do think there are other families that do this. And I think just reaching out and seeing what they do can be really helpful. For me, packing food is just one of the easiest. Like in the long term, it's way easier than getting sick in a different country, you know, yes, or having
definitely.
It's not fun and it's not necessarily like good food. It's, you know, my gluten-free bread and
Pop-Tarts, jelly, cereal.
Yeah. You know, but that is what I do.
Yeah.
I wish I didn't have to do that, but I know lots of people didn't have to do that.
It's unfortunate.
That's reality.
It is. And I don't know if any of the listeners out there have any like Instagram accounts that they follow that do really good with celiac traveling or allergy traveling. Let us know.
I have
Oh, do you shout it out? We'll link it in the show notes. Yeah.
She's so good. Hers is simple.adventurous.life. Okay. And hers is geared more towards celiac, but she also talks about allergies. She does a really good job and they travel.
That's
all
amazing. Because if someone else has already done it, you can copy it in a much easier way because they can tell you, we ate here, here, and here. Here are the meals that were good. Here are the meals that are approved for these allergies. So that's a super good option. We are going to link her in the show notes for any of you guys that might deal with gluten intolerance or celiac because that's an awful lot of people these days.
Mary Ellen, I'm curious how Honduras was for your son with the nut allergy, how you found that.
He did great. He did great in Honduras. We ate a lot of food made by people. So we went with our church and we were on a service trip. And so we were learning and we did tell the people that were kind of our tour guides there. We made sure that they understood. And like you said, we took a bag of snacks so that I could have something ready in my back pocket at all times. A lot of the things that we ate were, I don't think the culture there and Spanish culture has as much hidden nuts as, say, India, where I can't even think about taking my kids there because there's so many hidden tree nuts in sauces and things. So we ate a lot of flour tortillas that are just basic, you know, flour and water, and we didn't have to worry so much about that. But we did bring it up to people as much as we could and made sure to have the EpiPen with us and prayed. And tried to be responsible and just trust God to care for him, basically.
I love the allergen cards. And you can get those for anything that is in the local language. So I just get on and I'll buy them and I'll print it out and download it. And that is actually really helpful too. Like you just hand it to the server that's like, okay, this is really important and this is really dangerous, you know. And that has actually been really helpful for me.
I love that idea. I really hadn't thought about having a card printed out in the native language with all the instructions because we relied on our interpreters who were wonderful because I don't speak Spanish. And so they kind of conveyed the message for us. But that idea of having a card is really great. I love that.
And I do think it's helpful too, like you said, India, right? And I agree with you. You probably – right now is probably not the time and season for your family to go to India. But one thing, if you have a listener that's like, well, I really want to go here, but I'm nervous about this, doing some research ahead of time or like, okay, what are some standard foods in Asia that have wheat in them? Or what are some standard foods that have peanuts? And then you just, I've done this too, where I will type up like, I cannot have soy sauce, cannot have, you know, X, Y, Z. And then you hand that over and, you know, you're kind of the Karen. But I actually have found that internationally, most people are really okay to accommodate you. And at least minimum to say, okay, this is safe for you, but this isn't.
That's really helpful.
Absolutely. This is a super important conversation. I also feel like it could almost be its own episode. We're just hitting all kinds of amazing stuff today, and I love it.
It's all over the place.
It's my favorite kind of episode. My ADHD is having a delightful time. I think as we're starting to wrap up, since we're already creeping up on an hour here, which is just crazy. This has been a very fast hour. Let's wrap up with some helpful products maybe that have been a lifesaver because traveling with kids is hard. Traveling with multiple kids is hard. Traveling in economy with kids is hard. Traveling super long distances with kids in economy when you got several of them, just unbelievably difficult. So give us some tips, products. What's been super game-changing for you?
Okay, super game-changing. We are like quite a rigid family at home. All yes. things go on the airplane. You want 85 pounds of M&Ms? Perfect. You want to play 12 hours of screen time while we're on this flight to Japan? Sweet. I, you know what? Whatever. I know some people feel really strongly against that. For me, yeah. it's survival. So, and how can this be a fun experience? So for toddlers, if you have young toddlers, my game-changing product are stickers.
Yes.
Yes. Stickers.
I'm telling you, stickers. I don't know why or what that is. For my tweens and my older kids, it's screen time. It's, you know what? You can download, as long as it's an appropriate movie, you can download whatever movies you want. You can play games for as long as you want. We have to turn them off from here to here so you can, you know, pretend to sleep. But we all know that that's not going to happen. Again, this is totally a personal thing. We've worked with our doctors on this. We will give our kids sleep aids that first day we're somewhere. Usually they're really benign sleep aids. But melatonin is great. That will help with those things when you, and again, it's just a personal decision mm-hmm. on what works for you. And I would say food, snacks. They have the ability to have a water bottle and snacks and things that they might need. I'm not big on tons of products. I've tried the products that you can like blow up the bed.
I was going to ask if you'd try any of that.
Yeah, I've tried it. And you know what? My toddler ends up kicking it off and it's just something more to take. I love not having to haul a car seat if I don't have to. So if I can either buy a car seat in country, so we bought a car seat in France. I didn't want to haul a car seat. then we'll do that. For Egypt, we didn't. They don't really have the same rules that we have. And I was like, no, I'm bringing my own car seat. I'm not hauling around my 18-month-old in a Middle Eastern country without a car seat. And so we hauled that giant thing all the way over there. There is a car seat I really do recommend that's lightweight. I can't remember the name of it, but we can link it in the show notes. Investing in a good stroller for little ones. I love the Nuna strollers, the umbrella strollers. Those are awesome. But I'm actually not huge on a lot of products. I'm kind of on less is more.
Less is more.
Yep. Yeah. And what works for you. I wish I said, oh gosh, you know, those blow up things work so well and we love them so much. But I've had more success just taking my blanket and tying it to the back of the tray table and letting him sprawl out on that. Treats, food, and screen time is... And again, that's not a sexy answer. That's not like a...
Sometimes you have to go back to the basics.
And I, you know, we limit screen time. We do limit screen time at home, but man, on the airplane, they don't. It's whatever we can... We're flying to Japan as a family, whatever, but however we survive.
I think that's perfect. Perfect answer. And it's kind of good to hear because I don't know how often I am targeted for ads for products for sleep on planes. And I like to stretch my points. We do a lot of economy flying. And, you know, when I see something that straps my head to the seat and covers my eyes and I don't have to sleep like this, I'm like, should I buy this? It's $70, but maybe it's worth it. And I think I need to remember that most of the time the products probably are not worth it and don't work as they say.
I do have a neck pillow that I'm obsessed with, and I can't remember the name of
that. Okay,
well,
probably should link that one as well.
I'll link it. And it was a little bit more expensive. I think it was like $40, but I've literally taken it everywhere. I have also tried, Joe, I've tried that thing.
You really? Okay, good to know.
And you know what? It might work for you. I don't know.
No, I am susceptible to advertising. If I get targeted with something enough and it's happening, yeah, this is good. I'm glad to hear it's a zero for you. I think a good solid neck pillow is a better way to go. So we'll link it.
I'll find it and we can link it in the show notes. I like it because you can, it connects to the back of the seat if you want. So you can kind of rest and then it straps right here. So your neck doesn't like bounce.
That sounds great.
Like yeah. And I think it was $40. It's like, yeah. And I've taken it everywhere. So I think
absolutely worth it.
As far as products for kids, I wish I had some good like magic, you know, wand. We do prep our kids and my kids are used to flying. And I will say the more you fly with kids, the easier they are. My 3-year-old can get himself through security. He can get himself on the airplane. He buckles himself in. It's just practice. And it's just acknowledging this is the not fun part and it's not going to last forever. And sometimes life isn't fun either. It's not bad for kids mm-hmm. to realize, you know, it doesn't,
they can,
it's not always
they need
fun.
To learn to be bored. In this day and age, yeah. that's really a problem that kids no longer know how to be bored. So
I don't think adults know how to be bored, to be honest. I was talking yes, to my sister true. About that the other day. Like, gosh, I'm on my phone way
oh,
too much.
When you find yourself pulling out your phone at an extra long traffic light or in a store line,
right? yes. you're like,
I have a problem. This is not good. It's time to quit my phone for a couple weeks or something.
Well, Cam, thank you so much for spending time with us today. Tell everybody where they can find you online.
Yes, of course. We're at Our Family Passport on Instagram. And then our blog is Our Family Passport. And it's all about families and making things doable and fun and experiencing the world together for yes. less. So we would love to have you come hop on over there if it works out.
Oh, yeah.
Out.
We're going to link everything in the show notes. Your Instagram is fantastic. And then you and Annie also have a course together, correct? We linked yes, it in last week's episode, but we're going to link it again so people can do that. Remind everyone what it's called.
It's called Travel Reward University. We call it TRUE. We have over 1,600 students in it, and it is genuinely awesome. We love our course. We took everything we knew about points and miles. I applied my academic background to it. It's fun. It's actionable. We have a great community. So we'd love, there's a wait list for it right now. So it's not open, but we'll drop the wait list and you can join the
Perfect.
Wait list. And yeah.
Amazing.
Okay.
Yes.
Cool. Yeah.
Thank you so much
Thank
for having
you.
Me.
Thank you. We really appreciate your time today. This was so fun, so informative, and there's just like so much here. And I am not kidding about that Egypt episode. We got to get you on our schedule.
I would yeah. love to. I would
okay.
love to.
Okay. All right. Well, everybody, yeah. you heard it here first. We're going to have a Points and Miles Egypt episode with Cam coming up, hopefully in the near future. We got to make our travel schedules all fit together.
Let's do it. Okay.
Amazing. Bye, thank you so much. Have a great day.
If you enjoyed this show today, please consider writing us a review or clicking 5 stars wherever you listen to your podcasts. And please subscribe and follow along so that you never miss an episode.
You can follow the podcast on Instagram or YouTube at Wonderland on Points Podcast. You can find me on Instagram at Family Travel for the Win with the number 4.
And you can find me on Instagram at Points to Wonderland.
If you're thinking about getting a new Travel Rewards credit card, consider using the links in our show notes. Using our links helps to support us and keep our podcast going so we can provide you with all the latest tips and tricks when it comes to traveling on points.
And if you aren't sure which card is right for you, shoot us an email at wonderlandonpoints@gmail.com and we would be happy to walk you through a free card consultation. That's also a great place to send us all of your comments and questions. Thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you here next time.